This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Floyd, and I'm filling in for Tony Perkins today. And of course, we welcome you to the Washington Watch. I want to encourage you to follow Tony Perkins at T. Perkins, at T. Perkins. He is the host of the Washington Watch on a regular basis, and he's also the president of the Family Research Council. And yes, I am Ronnie Floyd. I've been with you this week, and I'm the senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas and the immediate past president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Congress continues to be in recess, but we're going to catch up today with Congressman Roger Marshall of Kansas. And we'll get his take on health care and tax reform and other matters that are going on in Washington, and also hear what is on the minds of his constituents there in the state of Kansas. A leader of the Democratic Party says there is no litmus test on abortion for candidates in the party. And if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you. We're going to talk today to Penny Nance of Concerned Women for America. More Christian refugees than Muslims are entering the country since President Donald Trump took office. And Terry Jeffrey, the editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com, will discuss that report. And then towards the end of the program, we're going to feature an interview, a sit-down inside look at the life and leadership of Tony Perkins. We're going to talk to him about things he has never talked about on this program, and I promise you, you're going to enjoy the final segment of today's program. Well, so much is going on in America. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is breaking records again, hitting 22,000 for the first time ever, and President Trump continues to get health care and tax reform high on the agenda, or at least he desires for that to occur. And joining us now is Congressman Roger Marshall. He represents the big first district of Kansas, a big, big district in western Kansas. He is a physician, devoted father and husband, and as a physician, Dr. Marshall has delivered more than 5,000 babies, giving him a deep appreciation for the sanctity of life and an intimate understanding of the healthcare system. He brings 7 years of Army Reserve experience, where he helped train a mobile hospital support unit and rose to the rank of captain. Well, Congressman Marshall, we welcome you today on the Washington Watch.
Thanks, Dr. Floyd. Thanks for having me. And I just want to wish my wife a belated happy anniversary. We just had our first wedding anniversary 2 days ago and wanted to shout out to her. I'm on the road again today.
Oh, my. Well, good. And congratulations. Well, you know, President Trump recently tweeted, if Obamacare is hurting people, and it is, why shouldn't it hurt the insurance companies, and why should Congress not be paying what the public pays? Well, Congressman, let me ask you a question. What are the options at this point in passing new health care legislation?
Well, Dr. Floyd, the Senate cannot give up yet. Just because you fail does not make you a failure. They need to do something. We cannot keep doing what we're doing. The Obamacare mandates are killing small businesses. It's driving the cost of health care up. Medicaid is broken. A third of physicians no longer even accept Medicaid anymore. So the system is just so very broken, and the Senate just can't give up yet. They've got to come up with a solution. They got it in them. I know they can do it.
Well, you know, Congressman, as you know, the so-called skinny repeal bill, which would have removed some of Obamacare's least popular provisions, it failed last Friday in a 51-49 vote. Let me ask you this. Is there any hope, from what you know in your time in Washington, that perhaps a few Democrats will come along and support some kind of new bill that can forward a better health care system across America?
I would like to think so. I think if they look at their own states and see what's happening with health insurance rates almost doubling over the past couple of years, and the deductibles are so high, unless the government goes in and bails out those individual markets, insurance companies, they're going to go broke as well. It's going to leave many, many counties without insurance companies helping those people in individual markets. So I hope they can find in their heart a way to help start fixing the problem.
I'm Ronnie Floyd, sitting in for Tony Perkins today, and I'm in a conversation with Congressman Roger Marshall of the state of Kansas. Congressman Marshall, what can be done about the main sticking points of high insurance premiums and Medicaid from your perspective? I mean, you're a physician, you're a doctor. I mean, you came straight out of the healthcare industry serving our people of Kansas and serving all the people of the United States. What's your perspective of this?
Well, there are some things we need to start working on. And on the House side, we've already started working on that cost of healthcare. We passed a malpractice reform that would drive the cost of healthcare down 3%. We repealed a lot of the Obamacare taxes, which would decrease it another 3 or 4%. But beyond that, there's some things that we could work on, things like transparency. If pharmacies, physicians, hospitals had to make their prices transparent along with their outcomes, then I think the American consumer would start figuring out what they're going to do. But what we can't have is a one-size-fits-all Washington plan. We talked about erasing state lines and making health care affordable and expanding health care savings accounts, giving American consumers the option of controlling their own health care.
Congressman Marshall, you're out there today talking to your constituents. You're home this week, and for a while you're going to be out here all over Kansas, and I'm sure other parts of America doing various things with service as a congressman. But let me ask you, what are your constituents asking you about? What are they talking about? What are they saying to you right now?
The number one concern is typically the economy. And in Kansas, unfortunately, we're greatly impacted by the low prices of commodities, whether it's wheat or corn or sorghum, those types of things. So they're very, very concerned about the economy. You know what a lot of people, though, are telling me now? People that I hold dearest to my heart are coming up and telling me, stand beside President Trump, support him. We know he's not getting a fair shake in the press, but we're supporting his policy, so stand beside our president and keep focused on your job and get us a new farm bill done, make this nation more secure, and keep growing jobs.
Hey, Congressman, why don't you tell us, I know that you're pursuing this large farm bill. What does the American public need to know about this?
Well, I think, first of all, they need to realize that we're so fortunate and blessed to spend the least amount of our income on our food source. So the average American is so blessed. And one of the secrets that we've kept our prices down at the grocery store is a strong farm bill. A strong farm bill, among other things, helps provide crop insurance for farmers. So when Mother Nature comes and takes your crop away, it gives you enough money to plant next year's crop. So to most of my Kansas farmers, that crop insurance is the backbone of a farm bill. But beyond that, it also provides money for things like Meals on Wheels and a lot of our senior centers. It helps provide some extra funding for those, as well as staff, which is nutritional assistance. So those are some basic elements of the farm bill.
Hey, Congressman, in relationship to tax reform, it's quite interesting to know that taxpayers devoted estimated 8.9 billion hours to filing their taxes. That's $409 billion in lost productivity. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that filling out tax forms could be a part of this tax reform and making those less complicated for the vast, vast, vast majority of Americans?
Absolutely. That's a great point. Government tends to make the very simple complicated. Well, we need our leaders that will make the complicated simple.
Yes.
And in visiting with Paul Ryan and Kevin Brady on the House Ways and Means Committee, our goal is to be able to have the average American fill up their entire income tax on the backside of a postcard. We've even got plans of it already done, and you can go to betterway.gov and see what that simple form looks like.
That's really great to know. Well, I hope that that occurs, because it definitely needs to occur. And so, from your perspective, Congressman, fixing our broken tax code for families and small business and workers and job creators, is that not of the utmost importance? I mean, my goodness, the economy is so important, and the tax code is broken. Don't you think it is of high importance?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the things that we all ran on that we would get done this year is both tax reform, the first tax reform really of significance since President Reagan. And if we will follow the blueprint that we've laid out, the average family making $55,000 a year, under our new plan, they would have an extra $5,000 in their pockets to spend. Mm. So not only are we going to make it simpler, but we're also going to increase their standard deductions and lower their rates. So we want the money in the consumer's pockets, in the family pocket, and let them figure out where to spend the money, not let the federal government figure out where to spend your money.
Well, Congressman Marshall, about the disunity that's going on in Washington and obviously around the country, do you see any hope from where you sit about coming together? Do you think that's possible? Do you think it's so polarized that there's no way? I mean, how are you dealing with that as a leader? You know the key to moving people is unity. So how do we do this?
My experience in Washington has not been that attitude of a partisanship. My finding is that we have lots in common. Whenever I can find something in common is when we can work together. So when I go visit a Democrat congressman in Florida and make a visit to Texas to hear about their farm concerns, I try to figure out, what do we have in common? And do you realize that there's cattle that come from Florida to Kansas to finish grazing and to be fed? So we have so much in common. Immigration is going to be a bipartisan opportunity as well. First of all, it's the godly thing to do is to work on immigration reform. But it's also an opportunity for Democrats and Republicans to get together. And now that President Trump has secured the border, we can have bipartisan discussions about immigration. We just did some bipartisan legislation to fund the military and to fund the Veterans Association. So we have to find out what we have in common and work very hard towards each other. So I think there's a huge bipartisan opportunity to work together, and it starts by us figuring out what we have in common.
Well, Congressman Marshall, I really appreciate your words, and thank you for your leadership. It's so important that Americans always appreciate those that serve our country, and you are serving our country, and we are very, very grateful. And also thank you for what you do and what you have done to help families and deliver 5,000 babies. That is quite remarkable. Well, the Lord bless you, Congressman Roger Marshall of Kansas, and I want to thank you again for being on the Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Dr. Floyd, and keep praying for us. Keep praying for all the congressmen, our president, all of us. We sure appreciate it.
Have a great day, Congressman. Well, coming up next on the Washington Watch, a key Democratic leader says there is no litmus test for Democratic candidates on the pro-life issue. Hey, do you believe that? When we return, we're going to be talking to the woman who is the leader of the Concerned Women for America, Penny Nance.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage, and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askfrc. Thank you for standing with us.
After becoming sexually active at 15, Anne was pregnant at 17. Hi, Kim Cotola for Cradle My Heart today. Her mother threatened to kick her out unless she aborted. Anne complied. She drove herself downtown and walked across one of Pittsburgh's many bridges to her first experience of even being examined in that setting. She says, I remember the tears and the sounds and how the doctor said he thought he had gotten everything. When she returned home, her mother simply said, we will never speak of this again, and they didn't. But at a Christian retreat many, many years later, Anne was helped to process her experience, which enabled her to be able to speak about it and write about it on her blog, and to accept that she is accepted and forgiven in Jesus Christ. Find out more of Anne's story of God's love after abortion and her ministry today at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. Democrats will not withhold financial support for candidates who are pro-life. That's according to the chairman of the party's campaign arm in the House. Representative Ben Ray Lawan, Democrat from New Mexico, said there will be no litmus test for candidates as Democrats seek to find a winning roster to regain the House majority in 2018. Well, with us now to discuss that strategy is Penny Nance, the president of Concerned Women for America. Penny, welcome to the Washington Watch.
Well, it's always an honor. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Penny, we really appreciate your organization, and I have a question for you right up front today. Do you really believe there is no litmus test for Democratic candidates on the issue about life?
Of course, that's laughable. Of course there's a litmus test. And immediately after that came out, Cecilia Richards went on a, who's the head of Planned Parenthood, went on a Twitter tirade.
Yes.
And, you know, called out the head of the DCCC. And then, of course, the head of the DNC has said just the opposite. The situation is that the Democrats need 24 seats to control Congress and to push forward their abortion agenda. While, you know, Cecilia Richards may refrain from over-the-top criticism because she wants the Democratic Party to control Congress and she wants an abortion agenda, at the end of the day, she was forced to say something. And the other issue, of course, is to win 24 seats. Mm. The Democrats know that life is a winning issue. And so there's a real issue, you know, they're having a real problem within their own party deciding what they believe.
Yeah, there is definitely a waffling that is happening. And, you know, Penny, as you well know, because you're on top of this issue continually, is that the favor of abortion and that entire mentality in America is decreasing with more technology.
That's right.
Of really knowing about the power of life. Why don't you talk about that for a moment?
Well, I mean, statistically, we know that America is so much more in line with Concerned Women for America and the pro-life movement than they are with Cecil Richards and the Democratic Party. Their position, and Hillary Clinton, by the way, was their standard bearer, was that abortion should be legal at any point, any reason, any number, all paid for by the taxpayer. They've completely lost millennials because of science. because this generation own their own sonograms, and they know, they understand that what's at stake is a beating heart when we're talking about the issue of abortion. But, you know, the hardcore left, the activists on the left, are really pitching a fit within the Democratic Party and saying, no, you have to stand in line with us. There can be no quarter for pro-life Americans, even if they agree with us on every other issue. And by the way, this is something that there used to be pro-life Democrats. I mean, there's still just a few left in Congress, but when I started lobbying in the early 90s, there were many. And we were able to work across party lines, but the Democratic Party went further and further to the left. Their positions became more extreme. Governor Casey of Pennsylvania was told he couldn't speak at the Democratic convention because he was pro-life, and so on it is gone. And now they've come to their conclusion, a few within the party recognize that in order to win those 24 seats, that they may actually need to change their position, but we'll see.
Well, Penny, one of the things that I have loved about your organization for many years is the strong commitment that you have to the sanctity and the dignity of human life. Why don't you tell our listeners today a little more about the Concerned Women for America, what you stand for, and what you're about in today's culture?
Well, thank you so much. Concerned Women for America is the nation's largest public policy women's organization. We have about 500,000 members around this country. We have 400 adult chapters. We have about 40 Young Women for America college chapters. We're unapologetically pro-life women. We're full portfolio conservatives, and we're working very hard with this administration, with this Congress and state legislatures and the media to drive the message that life is winning, that abortion stops the beating heart, and that we must protect the least of these. If we really believe in what we say we believe as people of faith and as women across this country believing in equality, that we must protect these innocent children. So we're working very hard to defund and shift the funding from Planned Parenthood away from them to community health centers that really do help poor women. There's 13,000 of those around the country. We're working to pass the 20-week ban. We're working to stop all forms of taxpayer funding of abortion, and by the way, that's still happening. We have a lot of work to do, and it was actually a very hard day when we lost on the health care vote because we were going to be able to shift the funding away from the nation's largest abortion provider, Planned Parenthood, so we have to get back at that. We have a lot of work still yet to do.
Well, Penny, in our final minute, I want you to answer this question today, and I want to talk about the millennials and even young girls that are right now in high school and beyond. What is the strategy? I heard you mention it just a moment ago. Mm-hmm. What is the strategy about how to really bring them along? And we only have just a minute left for you to answer, but I really want our listeners to hear this.
Well, thank you. As I said, you know, we are winning on many issues with the millennial and younger generation, Generation Z, and we are doing it mostly because of science. But we are not just stopping there. We're working on other issues, including marriage, including support for Israel, and we're doing it through college chapters. We have, as I said, 40 and growing. We're getting ready to bring all of them to Washington, and we're putting information out there and talking specifically to them.
Well, thank you, Penny. That is outstanding, and I want to commend you for your leadership. I want to thank you for the Concerned Women for America, and thank you again, Penny, for being on the Washington Watch today.
Thank you for having me. God bless.
You have a great day, and God bless you. And coming up next on the Washington Watch, more Christians than Muslim refugees have been admitted to the United States in the first months of the new administration, reversing a trend that had seen Muslims outnumber Christians under the former president and his administration. We'll talk with Terry Jeffrey of CNSnews.com when we return. So join me in a moment as we continue on the Washington Watch.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we've now seen in the Dow 31. That is the number this year alone that we have seen a record high on the close. Pretty amazing. It looks like the markets continue to be just immovable, at least when it comes to the garbage and the political wrangling that is going on in Washington, D.C. The one thing that will certainly move the markets downward, I am beginning to believe it's becoming more and more apparent that the idea of getting tax reform in November seems almost impossible. It looks like we're already at odds over a potential budget and a debt ceiling increase, which has to be done by September 30th. Lots of differences of opinions in that regard. It looks like the Democrats are hoping to get a bipartisan tax deal. That's probably not going to work real well because their pet projects for the Democrats don't cross the same path as the pet projects for the Republicans. We've got enough issues with the Republican side trying to find some unity. I think adding in some sort of bipartisan issue is going to be even more difficult to find any consensus. Of course, Schumer wants to see the Democrats play a role. He definitely understands that if we get tax reform, it is going to be the key driver to the economy for 2018. And certainly the Democrats would like to say they played some role in that increase in economic growth. Well, ADP jobs came out, look a lot better. As a matter of fact, they raised June to 191, and expectations for jobs this week came in at 178 for ADP. Friday is the important number.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
According to CNSNews.com, a new report issued by the State Department finds that under the Trump administration, more Christian refugees than Muslims has entered the country. That marks a considerable shift in the religious affiliation breakdown of refugees admitted into the United States. With us now is Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. And I want to welcome you, Terry, to the Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You know, more than half of those admitted under Trump, President Trump, 51.2% are Christians, compared to 43.3% of those who arrived during the same period 1 year earlier under President Obama. Let me ask you where you sit with all that you deal with in your role. What do you see and how do you see this issue regarding the refugees?
Well, first of all, the last year of the Obama administration was really an extraordinary year for the United States in accepting refugees. We accepted a lot more, almost 85,000, than we'd had in any recent year. And a higher proportion of them were Muslims than any other faith. And that was extraordinary because in Syria, the Congress of the United States had declared, and the State Department under Obama had declared that in Syria, we had Christians being targeted for genocide by the Islamic State, and yet they were not being admitted to the United States as refugees. And almost all of the refugees coming to the United States from Syria in particular were Sunni Muslims, which is the sect to which the Islamic State claims to belong. So there's been a massive shift with now there being a majority this year who are Christians. That's a massive shift from last year. But interestingly, they're still not coming from Syria.
Yes. Well, Terry, what about the religious affiliation of refugees and how is that verified? Would you tell our listeners that today?
Well, this information comes directly from the State Department. The State Department is in charge of processing refugees, and they, on a daily basis, issue data, and we follow that here at CNS News. We did a lot of reporting last year about the overwhelming percentage of Muslim refugees being in the United States and the remarkably small number of Christians. But so the data comes directly from the government. It's hard data because these are actual people. They don't report the names of the individuals, but these are people who have been through a long process of being allowed into the United States as a refugee. So we know what country they came from. We know what religion they claim to be. And hopefully we know a lot more about them than that. But that's where the data comes from.
Well, won't there be folks who claim that this report shows Islamophobia from the Trump administration? Has that been said? Have you seen that? Will they claim that or not, Terry?
Well, you see the liberal media and liberal politicians all the time mischaracterizing exactly what was going on with Trump's refugee policy and trying to describe it as targeting Muslims in particular, which quite frankly was false. I mean, people can go on the White House website and look at the text of President Trump's initial order on refugees. And one of the things it said, it suspended refugee admissions originally from seven countries. And the liberal media say, well, these are predominantly Muslim countries. Well, for example, it did not suspend refugee admissions from Indonesia, which is the largest Muslim country in the world. It did not suspend admissions from Saudi Arabia. And even within, or Egypt, for example, but even in those countries in the Middle East, like Iraq and Syria and Libya, where they were suspending the admission of refugees under Trump's order, the order said that they first of all wanted to tighten up the rules to make sure they knew who they were letting in. But secondly, at the end of the suspension, they wanted to provide an advantage to people who were members of persecuted religious minorities within those countries. And within Syria, for example, which is a majority Sunni country, Shia Muslims were persecuted by the Islamic State, just as Christians. So Shia Muslims would have had an advantage under Trump's order. In Iraq, where you have a Shiite majority and a Sunni minority, Sunni Muslims would have been eligible for that if they were persecuted because of their religion exemption in Trump's order. So from the very beginning, the liberal media and liberal politicians were misrepresenting what Trump's order actually said. It was not a Muslim ban.
Well, Terry, I want to thank you again for being on the Washington Watch. Terry Jeffrey is the editor-in-chief at CNSnews.com. And my final question to you, and we only have just about 30 seconds for you to answer this question, how should our listeners be encouraged by this news in relationship to this issue?
Well, you know, I think there seriously was a security problem and is a security problem in that we can't properly vet refugees coming in, particularly from places like Syria. We know that there's a potential for terrorists to come in, and President Trump and his administration is trying to do something about that. I think that's a very serious issue. I think they need to move forward and still try and deal with it in every possible way they can.
Well, thank you, Terry. You have helped us, and we appreciate you being on the Washington Watch today. Well, listen, coming up next, we're going to do something that is not done very often. Every day on this broadcast, you listen to Tony Perkins. I've gone inside to Tony's life. I'm going to interview him and give you an inside look at the life and the leadership of Tony Perkins. Be sure that you join us over the next few moments. I promise you, you will be encouraged to know more about the man that you listen to 5 days a week here on the Washington Watch.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S. option 5.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hey, this is Kirk Cameron, and I want to congratulate the American Family Association for 40 years of standing for truth in our culture. I so appreciate the efforts of Don Wildman and Tim Wildman and the entire staff at AFA. I've seen how God has used them time and time again to resist what is evil in the culture and stand for what is good. Praise God for what He's done through the American Family Association for the last 40 years.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. I'm Ronnie Floyd, senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas, and I'm also a member of the board of directors of the Family Research Council, which has been a real privilege to be one of those eight people who sit down periodically with the man who hosts this broadcast every day named Tony Perkins. He's the president of the Family Research Council. You know, when I began to hear Tony and I listened to what he says, and this is a fantastic ministry that he leads, a powerful organization that really stands for conservative values and what we're about, especially those of us who are people of faith and family and freedom. Recently on a podcast called Ronnie Floyd on Life and Leadership Today, I sat down with Tony Perkins and I talked to him about his own life. An inside picture of Tony, the guy that you often don't get to hear about because I ask him to talk about himself a little bit, and he would never do that on this podcast or on this broadcast. But on our podcast, we've had people like Steve Green, Dave Ramsey, Greg Laurie, Jack Graham, James Dobson, and of course, Tony Perkins. I want you to sit down today, and I want you to listen to this interview. I promise you, you will be encouraged to know about the life and the leadership of Tony Perkins. You know, people like you, Tony, you're seen and heard so often through media and read about in newspapers nationally. But many people do not see you as you really are. In fact, some may be surprised because you do have a life outside of Washington, D.C. You're a husband, you're a father, and even the interim pastor of the church that you and your family are members of, and that you even serve as an elder of that same church. So tell us about that side of Tony Perkins that most Americans never see and just do not know.
Well, I've been married for over 30 years to my wife, whom I met in New Mexico at Glorieta, New Mexico,
oh,
Baptist
goodness,
Retreat Center.
Amazing.
The true story, we met on a bicycle built for two.
Oh,
I was with a friend of mine, and there was a couple of girls there, he chose one girl, and I met this other girl, and I let her get up front and do all the pedaling, and she's been pedaling ever since. And that's how we met. We have five children. I've been blessed with five wonderful children.
Mm.
And, you know, people think that I'm a political animal because I'm in Washington. Anybody involved in Washington is political. I was never involved in politics. Now, I voted. As soon as I turned 18, I registered for Selective Service, and I registered to vote. But before I was elected to office, the sum total of my political involvement was, I think, maybe putting up two yard signs. Mm. That was it. I was in college Republicans. I never thrived on politics. I understood the importance of it, and I voted. But I never wanted to be involved. And I was a police officer after coming out of the Marine Corps, mm-hmm. active in my church, started in radio doing some commentary and weekend radio programming. But it was the Lord that led me, because I surrendered to the ministry in May of 1992, Mother's Day of 1992. And I told the pastor, I said, you know, I don't think the Lord's calling me to be a preacher, because I don't think Marines make good preachers. You know, people come for sympathy and you tell them to give you 20 push-ups, you know. And so I wasn't sure. I registered for seminary in New Orleans. And all of a sudden, the Lord changed courses for me, and I ended up being a television news reporter covering the legislature in Louisiana. And that's where the Lord showed me. He said, that's your ministry. Hmm. I said, wait a minute, that's not a ministry. That's politics. Romans 13, where Paul talks about they are ministers of God. I think the role of the church is we have a role in the culture, and that is in education, that's in the political realm, that's in entertainment. I think wherever there are people— the church should be there upholding the truth in a compassionate way. We should speak, as Ephesians 5 says, speak the truth in love. We should speak out of a redemptive heart.
That's right.
It's not about winning an argument. It's not about prevailing. Rather, it's about transforming the hearts of men and women with the truth.
Well, Tony, in your family, you went through something really challenging. Last fall of 2016, the floods of Louisiana came. And listen, folks, while Tony, imagine this for a moment, while Tony's on the front lines of this changing culture and advancing what we believe in so deeply, and thank you for championing it, faith and family and freedom, America's also going through at the same time the most challenging election probably in our lifetime. And then in the fall of 2016, in the middle of the presidential election, the rains and the floods hit the greater Baton Rouge region, and you, Tony, and your family, you lost your home. I mean, what was this like to go through this adversity?
Well, fortunately, I've been so busy, I hadn't had time to think about it. But it was kind of surreal when that happened. I'd actually had my youngest daughter. We had gone to a father-daughter ranch in California. I take all my kids to JH Ranch, a great ministry opportunity, just father and teen, spiritually challenging, and do high ropes on. So we had a great time. Get back, it had been raining for about 5 days. And the last day, we ended up like 23 inches of rain in 24 hours. You know, when the animals started coming out of the woods around our house in pairs, I should have known something was up. We ended up getting on our property. Our driveway was covered in 10 feet of water, and we had to escape in a canoe. Actually, a canoe and a flatboat. All of us won't fit in one canoe. 7 of us, plus the neighbor, his wife, and 2 kids. And so we were paddling out, and as we were getting out, This was in the middle, as you said. It was in the middle of the campaign, the primary, or in the general election. I get a text from the campaign manager of Donald Trump, you know, asking a question. I said, I'm sorry, I got to get back with you. I'm evacuating my house in a canoe, you know. And so a week later, Donald Trump and Mike Pence came to my church, Greenville Springs Baptist, and into the community, and because it had gotten no attention. And they came down and brought the national media, and all of a sudden we started getting some relief there. And I toured the community in the suburban with President Trump, then candidate Trump, and Mike Pence, and he was truly moved. I saw a side of him, and I had a chance to spend some time with him before, but he was truly moved by the devastation that he saw, because the TV cameras simply could not capture it. And as you point out, it's still ongoing.
God uses those times to groom us and to grow us. And Tony, you are a growing leader. In fact, your organization is growing. Your personal influence in Washington is growing and even beyond. I mean, God has raised you up, and your leadership is constantly having to change. So, Tony, I want you to give our listeners today 2 or 3 lessons on leadership that you're learning right now in your life.
Leadership requires you to be regimented. And I think you spiritually you have to be fit. Emotionally, you got to be fit. That means you've got to get rest, and I know that's hard for some leaders, and I struggle with that from time to time. You got to eat well. We've got to be spiritually attuned to what God is saying, and that means we got to be not only praying but listening as we read and study His Word. And I don't think any leader ever gets beyond that point of needing to hear a fresh word from God.
Absolutely.
If we spend too much time listening to talk radio and watching cable news, we become anxious. And what does the Scripture say? You know, be anxious for nothing.
That's right.
But by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known unto God. And so I think Christians would do better to kind of turn off the TV, except when my radio program comes on. You know, when you listen on that talk radio program, but the others you can turn off. But you spend more time in prayer, because what I find is that when we get the heart of God, then that's when we're prepared to do the work of God. And if we're trying to do it without His heart, it's motion without meaning.
Well, Tony, tell us today about the Family Research Council. What is it like now to be the leader of the Family Research Council at this time in America?
Well, Dr. Floyd, there's a lot here. I'm like the tip of the iceberg, and you know that because you've been around the organization, you've seen the people, you serve on our board, and you know that we've got about 80 dedicated men and women who have given their lives to serve the Lord in this capacity. And they see it as a ministry. This isn't a job. It's a ministry. And we are the eyes, the ears, and sometimes the mouth of Christians across this country here in Washington, D.C. We are their voice. We represent them here. Literally, we're kind of like having, if you've got a congressman, a senator that doesn't represent you, by partnering with us, we literally do. I mean, we work very closely with members of Congress. We draft legislation. We provide research for them to help them understand the issues. Of course, our issue set is we work to shape public policy as it pertains to families from a Christian perspective. We're unapologetically Christian. We don't hide the fact that we follow Jesus Christ, that we believe that the Bible, which was good enough for the founders to build a nation on, we believe it's still good enough to guide a nation by. And of course, one of the areas that I brought when I came here almost 14 years ago was an outreach to churches. We call it our Watchmen on the Wall. I believe that the issues that we are wrestling with as a nation today, you name it, healthcare, immigration, crime, suicide, assisted suicide, redefinition of marriage, abortion. Yes, those are issues that have political elements with it we're wrestling with in this arena, but at their core, they're spiritual.
That's right.
They're moral. The Scripture speaks to those issues. And so if we're going to address these spiritual issues, we have to have the spiritual leaders of the nation engaged. Obviously, the supporting entities within the organization and our development helping us raise the money, because we receive no government money, and it's all funded by private donations from Christians across the country. Some 50,000 different individuals who stand with us financially and are part of what we do here.
That's remarkable, Tony. What a tremendous, tremendous ministry. Tony, if you had to tell Americans the top three pressing issues in our country today, the kind of issues of which people cannot sit this one out. I mean, everyone has to be on the front lines over these issues. Be as succinct as you can, as specific, because I really want our people to catch the vision and the heartbeat.
That's not difficult at all. Top on the list is religious freedom. And you say, well, what do you mean by religious freedom? Religious freedom, as was recognized in our Bill of Rights, is that we have the free exercise of religion, meaning the ability to live our lives according to our faith. You say, well, what does that mean? First off, it means that we have to advocate for and make sure that government recognizes that God-given right. That wasn't given to us by government. It was given to us by God, and our government has recognized it, and therefore it has protected it. But here's what each and every one of your listeners can do. is commit to live your life according to your faith in Jesus Christ without fear. Proverbs says that the fear of man is a snare. We have to start living boldly, courageously, compassionately, but boldly for the Lord Jesus Christ. That's number one, because everything emanates from our ability to live our lives according to our faith. All of these issues that we deal with are really subsets of our ability to structure our lives according to biblical faith, which the founders saw is essential to the success of this nation.
You know, since the 1st of January of this year, 2017, I've served on your 8-member board of directors of the Family Research Council. And while I've known you for several years and really have gotten to know you very well in these past 3 or 4 years, and now that I'm seeing your leadership and the Family Research Council from the inside, it's very impressive. Tony, here's my question to you. For the leaders of business and education and ministry and politics and law and any others of which people are leaders, how should they navigate through these delicate challenges that each of us face within our changing culture?
To me, what I think we have the greatest void of in America today and in the church is courage. I think courage is in short supply. When we have a fear of man, we cannot have a reverence for God. And I think more than anything, leaders need to know who they are in Christ. Part of that, and the difficulty of that, is that you got to spend time with him. And you're busy CEO, you're busy businessman, and you think the last thing you have time for is a Sunday school lesson. I'm not talking about reading a Sunday school lesson. I'm talking about knowing the Word of God and spending time with God. And when you do that, there's a confidence that comes that you, like David, when he faced Goliath, he said, you know what? I can handle this guy. The same God who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear will deliver me from this uncircumcised Philistine. And so I think that's not just for pastors.
That's right.
It's not just for politicians. It's for moms. It's for dads. It's for businessmen. It's for students. Trust God. Fear him and no man. And I believe you have then the elements of true leadership.
Well, here on the Washington Watch, you just heard a sit-down inside interview with Tony Perkins, the man who always leads this incredible broadcast on a daily basis. Courage, he represents it. Courage, that's what the Family Research Council is about. If you'd like to hear that interview in its totality, go to Ronnie Floyd on Life and Leadership today at and on iTunes. It's a joy to have you today on Washington Watch. I really hope that you'll join us tomorrow. I guarantee you, your life will be better. You will know more about America as we continue to forward faith, family, and freedom here on the Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.